Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Chairperson for today's meeting. We'll open the meeting as we always do with the Serenity Prayer. So if I ask the people at Guest in the Studio to join me for that, that would be great. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Great. Okay, we'll start by reading the AA preamble. It explains a little bit about what Alcoholics Anonymous is and also what it isn't. So Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And so in the studio this morning, we've got a group from As Bill Sees It. So here at the As Bill Sees It meeting in Wellington on Wednesdays at 5:30 at the Toy Ponicky Arts Centre. And usually in that meeting, they start with a reading, and they start with one of the ones is how it works. So I'm just going to read a bit of how it works from the chapter 5 of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, often known as the Big Book. So I'll read that to start us off. So chapter 5, how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose, in a general way, what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember, we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he was sought. So that was a reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, Chapter 5, How It Works. So now we're in the meeting, so I will ask Ross to share.
Thanks, Dan. This is Wayne.
Yep.
Thanks, Dan. My name's Ross. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ross.
Don't know where to start, really, but I can say one thing that to kick off is that I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for AA. I wouldn't be here as in alive, because I was on a big downhill road when I was drinking. Bit of history. I could basically was allowed to drink a beer at the table with my parents by the age of 7 with a roast dinner on a Sunday. But that just led, for me at the time, I think, hey, this is great, I can drink a beer with my parents at the dinner table. And I didn't know anyone else at my age that was drinking, which is probably a good thing. But one thing led to another, and I tried over the years, many years to stop. Tried going to AA, and the first time I went to AA, I thought, no, this isn't for me. All of these old guys sitting there talking about their rubbish they've done and things like that. Pretty much what I'm doing now. But I just didn't like it. It didn't suit me. And also, I thought at the time that it was, I didn't want to have to relive all of my stuff again. Every time we went to AA. But at the same time, I didn't realise that you didn't have to share if you didn't want to share. So that's a good thing, because you can sit there and listen. And definitely, I did and still do identify with something that everyone says in the rooms when I go to AA. And I really like it now. It's great, great people. It's very social as well, which is great. It's great being able to go out to restaurants and things where you don't drink, and you still remember the night before, and you don't wake up with a hangover. But one thing led to another, and I had tried off and on for years to stop drinking, and if I stopped drinking, I would go to marijuana instead. But that's really the same thing, because you're getting high, it's out of your, you're sort of getting out of your head, so to speak. So it's one and the same thing, drugs, alcohol. But I think they say that if alcohol was invented today, it would be banned, a banned substance. But it wasn't until about 18 years ago when I had my wife went down to Christchurch and I decided, yeah, this is time for me to have a few drinks. I was on my own, had a bit of a binge, got some beers in, and the next morning I woke up and I had a stroke. And I couldn't talk properly at all, couldn't say any legible words, so I couldn't really call an ambulance because I couldn't say what was wrong. And I was still probably half cut anyway, half bruised, so I jumped in the car and drove down to the doctor's surgery, and he said, oh, you've had a stroke, I'll call an ambulance. So, and since then, two choices. I mean, when you have a stroke, I don't recommend you have one, but for those that have had a stroke, you know that initially you feel like you really don't want to live, because you feel like you're a bit of a vegetable because you just can't speak, which I couldn't, and you feel so depressed because of it all, and you know what you want to say in your head, but you just can't say it. So I suppose I was stuck with a choice of, do I want to live or do I want to carry on the way I was going? And after talking with my wife, once she came back from Christchurch, I decided, no, I want to live and have a much better life. So hence, I went to a lot of speech therapy and managed to be able to talk a little bit again. Still suffer from some of the effects of the stroke in my speech, but overall, I can speak, which is great. I've never looked back though. I still remember the days when I was drinking. I still remember that particular day. It was the 23rd of December 2000. Terrible times to have strikes. I mean, the place is busy anyway. The hospitals are busy as hell because they've got a lot of drunks and stuff in there anyway. And I was one, the doctor who saw me, he's apparently quite senior these days, but he really rubbed me up the wrong way. He said, oh, you've had an alcohol and juice stroke. I said, no, I haven't. It's got nothing to do with alcohol at all. he just laughed and said, oh, it does. I said, no, it's not. You don't get a stroke from drinking. But I have since learned that, yes, of course you can get a stroke from drinking. Especially a binge. If you're interested, look it up online. Avascular necrosis is something that can happen with drinking, where your veins or arteries go into spasm and can cause a clot. Hence, you can have a stroke or a heart attack, whichever way you want to go. But so I'm here today thanks to that decision I made, and my wife helped me along. She's been a rock all the way, because those drinking days were terrible for her. Because I was drinking in the end, especially when I got unemployed, which was pretty much through the drinking. And I was like, whilst no mates at the pub, I go there at 10 a.m. in the morning to the pub, and I wasn't working, so I wasn't earning money. But I was drinking the money away, and my best mate at the pub was the Pokies. So I gambled as well, so it was a no-win situation. They just continued to gamble, drink, and then it became time to pick up the wife, but I couldn't because I'd been drinking too much, so she'd have to catch a train, and yeah, the traumas would go on. I hate a lot of things I did, but I've made amends to those that I need to, and things these days are so much clearer and so much better. And life without drinking is just out of this world. It's, for a start, you remember everything, it's clearer, You think better, things that you do are better, and life overall is just so much better. That's about all I've got for today. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Ross.
Thanks, Ross.
Cheers.
This is Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, and you're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous Meeting on Air. We've got as Bill sees it in the studio today. So now, if you're listening and you want to get in touch with AA and you know, you relate to something you've heard, then there's a phone number, a free phone number, 0800 229 6757, and that number is 24/7 in most areas of New Zealand. So if you want to speak to someone who's a sober alcoholic and who can talk to you about AA and perhaps direct you to your nearest meeting, then you can call that number. That's 0800 229 6757. So that's available nationwide in New Zealand. And there's also the New Zealand AA website, aa.org.nz. Now, on there is also a meetings list. You can pick which area of the country you live in, and it'll come up with meetings in that area, and the times and the addresses and everything as well. And there's lots of other information about Alcoholics Anonymous on that website, which is aa.org.nz, including there's a list of, as well as the list of meetings, there are there's meetings on air, which is these meetings are available on podcasts. So on the AA website, aa.org.nz, hover above meetings, comes up with a drop-down list. One of those is meetings on air. If you click on that, it'll take you to a list of these meetings, which you can listen to from the site or download to your device or whichever you like. Now, there's also an Android meeting list app as well. There's a link to that too. So that's really quite handy if you're looking for a meeting, and you can download the app, and the app will tell you where the nearest meetings are, which is fantastic. So that works in New Zealand too. Very cool. All right. Well, let's carry on with the sharing now. So, Josephine, would you like to share?
Hi, I'm Josephine. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Josephine.
This meeting means a lot to me. I think meetings on air, podcast meetings, virtual meetings, are a great way of connecting with AA, the program and the fellowship, Chesterton. And there are lots of reasons why, you know, at times people can't get to a meeting, and for me, I knew that my drinking was taking me down quite fast. I knew what an AA meeting was. I'd been to AA. I'd been worried about my drinking for a long time. But I suppose about 2 years before I actually quit drinking, I started listening to these meetings. I listened to the Christchurch meetings, the meetings from Melbourne, and the Wellington meetings, and they kind of clarified some of my thinking about my drinking. And there was a term that I came to understand and that I now have greater appreciation of, which is that, well, it's not a term, it's a description of drinking and a description of alcoholic drinking, and that is that it's a progressive disease and that we tend to get worse, never better. And for me, that's what I was witnessing in my own life. But I didn't know how to capture it, or I didn't know how to make sense of it. My conception of an alcoholic was normally a man who was going through, having contact with the cops as a consequence of his drinking. He drove drunk, he beat people up, I had this very specific notion of what an alcoholic was, and it wasn't me, that's for sure. Although I knew that my drinking was habitual and it was daily, it was long term, but I didn't think that I fit the criteria for coming to an AA meeting. So I'd put my headphones on at home, sometimes while drunk, and listen to a meeting to ascertain or to keep an ear out for something that might remind me of myself. And I heard it, and I heard it a lot. And yet I was very fearful about actually making a genuine entrance into AA, because what that meant was me signalling to others, you know, and to myself, which was a big deal too, but signalling to others in the rooms that I could no longer maintain the semblance of a life I had. I had lost control and I needed help, and I found that transition hard. As in coming to a meeting, I found that hard, but once I was in, I found it an incredible relief. And so that's my very, very long introduction. I do really, really love these meetings, and if you feel like coming to a meeting in real life, so to speak, you might be pleasantly surprised. I think you will be. I'm nervous this morning. Sometimes I'm not nervous when I share, but I am nervous this morning, and yeah, it can be scary, you know, talking aloud about, you know, some of the things in life where, you know, we keep to ourselves. But the difference is that in an AA meeting, it's, you're very much understood, and there's a lot of common experience that may not exist in other, you know, parts of your life. By progressive, what I mean by that is my, I don't know whether my drinking was immediately alcoholic. There are certainly things that I can think of that I did in my teens and in my 20s that were very alcoholic and symptomatic. But I think I started to get really worried about my drinking when I was about 24, 25. I realized that drinking alone was really, really suited me. I could drink socially, but I started to want or to prefer to drift off on my own, and I knew that that was quite weird behavior, and so it was quite, I didn't make it obvious, but it led to some patterns, I suppose, around, you know, avoidance and suppression, and just how I learned to cope with life was to drink. And that didn't mean I wanted to go out to the pub and drink with others. It meant that I wanted to drink to process whatever I felt like I needed to process on that day. And maybe it was a positive day, maybe it was a negative day, but I started to develop a habit of drinking on my own, and that was really embarrassing for me, you know. If you're drinking a lot and you're drinking daily, then your appetite increases, your tolerance changes. And that also happened to me. So what may have got me drunk in the past no longer got me drunk. So I had to increase my intake. And of course that means that your following day is quite chaotic. Physical dependency can result. And that was where I was when I came in. I was trying very, very hard to keep the extent of my drinking to myself. I lived alone. I lived far away from anyone else that I knew, so I didn't really have neighbours, or, you know, nobody would drop in out of the blue. I'd created a life that was quite, that shielded me from the world. And I had come to think that was just what was meant for me. I was a woman who drank on her own in the bush outside of Wellington, and maybe that was my destiny. That's really where my kind of head often went. But physically, I was finding it really, really tough. Mentally, it had been tough for ages. Emotionally, spiritually, etc. But physically, it was getting quite yuck. And I felt like, I didn't feel like, I bloody knew that AA was the answer, because I'd been listening to meetings, because I knew what AA offered, and I just had to get to the point where I realised I was an alcoholic. I may not be going through the courts, I might not be driving drunk, I might not be da-da-da-da, but I was, you know, and that took a long time, and like Ross said, I don't know where I would be if it weren't for AA. I think addiction and, you know, alcoholism, it takes a variety of forms. It kills in a variety of ways too. You know, car accidents, suicides. I've seen a number of people depart who I believe probably could have been, you know, assisted by a 12-step program, but they didn't find it for whatever reason. And I think that, you know, I'm incredibly lucky to be in a city that offers so many meetings, to have such wonderful companions in the fellowship. And I feel like I'm not using enough AA phrases. I struggle with some parts of the program, but not as a whole. No way. I've tried everything else that's on offer, you know. And that's not to dismiss anything that has, you know, at points benefited me either. Talking about therapy or, you know, diarising your drinking or talking to others I found that I couldn't stop without AA, and professional help hadn't worked, you know. I might leave it there, but that would be my message would be, if you're on the outside looking in, come in. Come into a meeting. You're probably not listening to this. You haven't come across this accidentally. You are valuable, your life is valuable, and come in. So thank you.
Thanks, Josephine. This is Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM. You're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. So if you are listening and you want to get in touch with AA, I'll repeat the phone number and the website address, which I read before, which is 0800 229 6757. That's the phone number. That's a free phone number available 24/7 in most parts of New Zealand. So 0800 229 6757, or 0800 AA Works is a good way to remember that one. And the website, aa.org.nz, there's lots of useful information about Alcoholics Anonymous on there, including meetings in your area. So you can find meetings in all parts of the country, and also have a listen to some of these previous meetings on air by podcast. It's under Meetings and Meetings on Air. Also under Meetings is Android Meetings List app, which is a link to the app to find meetings in your area as well. So I might just do a bit more of a reading from the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a bit that I kind of related to, and actually made me feel quite uncomfortable at the beginning when I was reading it, because I knew it was kind of onto something. So this is chapter 3, more about alcoholism from the big book. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind, like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by a still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. So that was a reading from Chapter 3, More About Alcoholism, from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So my name is Dan, and I'm an alcoholic as well. And I remember when I read that, and it kind of made me realise that, you know, there's two types of people in the world. There are people that are, you know, alcoholics that can't control their drinking now and will never be able to in the future at any point, at any stage, in any situation, ever. And there are people that aren't like that, a bit like normal drinkers. And it made me uncomfortable because I realised, and I thought there's a pretty strong possibility that I'm of that first type that may never be able to drink socially again, ever, in any circumstance. Doesn't matter whether it's my 21st, my wedding anniversary, my team wins the FA Cup, you know, my country wins the World Cup. It doesn't, in any future situation, there'll be no special occasion where I can have a few drinks and then go back to not drinking. I mean, like I'll never be able to drink normally again. And that thought, you know, depressed me and horrified me and thought, you know, this is too much, you know. but I also knew that it was probably true. But so obviously I've you know, my drinking got me into the rooms of AA. The first time was when I was the age of 20, and you know, I wasn't prepared to accept that I could never control and enjoy my drinking again, because I'd only had a few years of it. I'd probably started drinking, you know, once I could get my own supply when I was about 15. I was tall enough and brave enough to go and buy my own alcohol, and so that's when my drinking really took off. I don't think I ever drank. I don't ever remember drinking normally. I always remember, you know, it was, yeah. I mean, what 15-year-old drinks normally? I mean, yeah, I don't know. but yeah, I mean, what 15-year-old thinks about drinking at all, really? Apart from, yeah. But anyway, I did think about drinking a lot when I was 15 and 16 and 17, and I got myself in quite a bit of trouble. And by the time of age of 20, I'd discovered AA. And, you know, I sat and listened, and I thought about what people were saying. Some of it did make me feel pretty uncomfortable, because I thought, this is actually a bit close to home for me. And maybe these people are onto something, you know, maybe these people might be right. And, but I kind of thought, well, you guys are all older than me. You drink a little bit differently to me. Some of you are from different backgrounds to me. You know, some of you I just don't relate to. You know, if you're from different, you know, levels of intelligence than me. And so I thought, no, I'll tell these people what they want to hear. You know, I'm an alcoholic, and I, you know, I'm not going to drink again, and I'm not going to do this and whatever. And then, you know, eventually I stopped going to meetings. And you know, as soon as opportunity came to drink again, I did. And but that was always going to happen, because, you know, I was telling them one thing and believing something else. And so I kept drinking, and, you know, all through my 20s and through most of my 30s. And you know, things happened, and I managed to kind of juggle my drinking along with my normal life. And sometimes it would fall over. Sometimes I would fall over, and and, you know, I did things that I was embarrassed about, and some things I was ashamed of, and some things which were funny, and you know, but that just became my persona, and that was, you know, I was, you know, drunk Dan, you know, and I was kind of known for being, you know, the guy at the party that would do stupid things or fall over or disappear, or, you know, it was part of my persona, and I accepted it. And yeah, But there were lots of things I wasn't happy about, aspects that, you know, like important things, which were important to me and important to other people, went out the window when I drank. And so if I had to be somewhere later on that evening and I'd decided to get drunk first, chances are I wouldn't make it, or I'd make it in such a state that I'd be an embarrassment to everybody. Or if I had things to do the next day, I would either not turn up or turn up in such a, you know, again, hungover, and I wouldn't contribute anything and I'd just be miserable. And and when I was drinking, I hated to miss out. Like, you know, I had to be the last one to leave the bar or the last one to leave the party in case I missed something that was amazing, you know. And but then, you know, as a consequence, I'd miss all this other stuff that happened the next day because I'd be asleep. Or, you know, I just had a very narrow view of the world, really, and like, everything was all about, you know, the next drinking event. That was the most exciting thing, like you know, St. Patrick's Day, isn't it today? Yeah. I mean, St. Patrick's Day was the most, you know, that and New Year's Eve, those were the big days in my calendar. I mean, now New Year's Eve passes and I might start till midnight and I might not, and it's not a big deal. And St. Patrick's Day, I mean, I have to even check when it is. Because, you know, and I used to look forward to it weeks in advance before, you know, and I'd work out what I was wearing and, you know, where I was going to go, and you know, make sure I had my alcohol supply sorted, and, you know, it was like a big day, you know. And, you know, that's how I lived my life. It was like, let's just plan, you know, my life around drinking events. Like, thinking even things like the Wellington Sevens, you know, that was a great place for me to hide, because it was a place where non-alcoholics would behave like alcoholics for a weekend, and it's a great place for a real alcoholic to hide in amongst them. So I really enjoyed that. But, like, you know, this is the thing, is I did enjoy a lot about drinking. Well, I enjoyed, you know, I enjoyed a lot of it, and there was a downside, but I was able to manage it until, you know, eventually over the years, the downside started to, you know, sort of cut into the good times, and there was sort of less good times. I sort of, you know, I used to have like a window of like, you know, maybe 2 or 3 hours where I'd be in my sweet spot and I'd be funny and, you know, I'd make everyone feel good and I'd, you know, I'd enjoy myself, and then and then I'd, you know, get past that point and get drunk, and, you know, like really drunk, and I'd just become annoying and you know, antisocial. And so the window kept getting smaller. I went from 3 hours to 2 hours to an hour to 10 minutes, you know, and towards the end, if there was a window at all, it might have been a few seconds, you know. And I just went from being, you know, pent up to, you know, making sure I was, you know, getting drunk, to like drunk and annoying straight away. And and that wasn't much fun for me or for lots of other people. And so eventually I sort of caught myself at a weak moment, and after a night out I decided to ring the 0800 number, looked it up in the phone book, and they said, oh yeah, this is at 9:30 on a Sunday morning. And I was still pretty I'd had a bit of sleep, but I was still pretty drunk from the night before. And they said, oh, there's a meeting on at 11 a.m. Within 5 minutes walk of where I was. So I went to that meeting and I breathed alcohol fumes over everybody, and they asked me to share, and I shared, and I cried, and, you know, it was all full of, you know, I don't know what to do, you know. But honestly, like, I was, you know, I was meaning it. I was just like, I was in a state, and after all that, they said, keep coming back, which I thought was okay. And so I did, and I knew that, you know, the time had come for me, and these people were onto something, and I kind of had a glimmer of hope, and I thought, I just need to hang on to this. And so I planned the next few meetings. Instead of planning drinking events for the next week, I planned meetings I was going to go to. So I went to a few different meetings, and some of them I liked and some of them I didn't like so much. So I chose the ones I liked and went to those, and started going to 3 meetings a week. Within a couple of weeks, I wanted to pick a really cool sponsor, because I thought, well, I'm cool, I need someone cool to, you know. I didn't know what a sponsor was, but apparently, you know, they told me a sponsor was someone that helps you through the steps, the AA, you know, Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I thought, okay, everyone seems to have a sponsor that's been around for a while, so I'll just do what they do and get one. And so I wanted to choose a real cool one, hadn't found anyone cool enough. And so someone rang me and said, well, his agent rang me, we were in a cafe, and he said, have you got a sponsor? And I said, no, not yet. And he said, well, tell you what, I'll be your temporary sponsor. I was like, oh, this guy wasn't one of the cool guys. And so I couldn't really say no, so okay, all right. And anyway, so within a couple of days, he'd passed me off to somebody else, which he thought would be, you know, good for me to work with. And so all of a sudden, I had a sponsor and started working on the steps. And that was the best thing I did in the early days, apart from just, I mean, because, like, just turning up and, like, not drinking and going to meetings, for me, that was fine for a couple of weeks, you know. But then I needed to actually decide, you know, I want to stick with this and actually, you know, it's more than just the meetings. There's the fellowship and there's the program, and the fellowship is, you know, for me is equally as important, but it's nothing without the program, and the program is the 12 steps, and I needed somebody to take me through those steps, and so that's what I got. And we went through the steps, and I've had a couple of two or three different sponsors, but you know, I've always had a sponsor. And gradually, through a number of different sponsors, I've worked through the steps, and I continue to work on the steps. And you know, life improves, and you know, I haven't had a drink now for you know, more than 6 years, nearly 7 years, and you know, and I'm incredibly grateful for them. I can't believe that someone that used to drink like me hasn't drank for that long. It's astounding. But like, you know, I used to hate missing out on things, and now I don't miss out on anything. It's like I'm up early on the weekends, and I spend my time engaged in things that I really want to be doing. You know, like playing drums. I play a lot of drums now. You know, when I was in the bars and the parties, oh yeah, I'm a drummer. You know, what's the drums you got? Oh, I don't have any drums. but I'm a drummer, and now I'm actually spending time actually playing drums, which is pretty cool. And you know, I'm engaging in life. I mean, the idea of getting, you know, for me, of being a sober alcoholic is like I didn't get sober just to go to a whole bunch of meetings. You know what I mean? It's like that's not my life. I mean, I go to meetings and I go to meetings regularly, and I enjoy those. But the whole idea of that is like, so that allows me to go into the world and into life and experience it and give back, you know, to be part of, you know, everything, not just so I can, you know, go to heaps of meetings. So now, I mean, I love my life. Like, you know, I've got freedom, and the biggest freedom I have is freedom from the millstone of alcohol is not around my neck anymore. Like, I don't have to get up and go to a party and go to a bar and go to, you know, a nightclub that night. It's like, I don't have to. But, you know, I barely go into bars now. I spend time doing the things which I really enjoy and spending time with. I mean, I'm not embarrassed about the people I hang out with anymore, you know. I'm not embarrassed about the situations I end up in. I don't cringe when I think, you know, do I say that to those people? And you know, and I can manage my finances better. It's just like everything's better. You know, I've got a relationship with a higher power, which I didn't have before. It's like, not physically, I feel great all the time. You know, yeah, it's working for me. Mm-hmm. And and as far as I know, this might be the only opportunity I get to stay sober, which. That thought and all the things I do keep me away from that first drink, you know, because if I have that first drink, there will be a second drink, and there will be a ninth drink, and there will be a 300th drink, and I'm not sure if I'd come back, you know. I don't know. I'd like to think I would, but I don't know. So I'd rather not take that chance. So I'll leave it there. But thanks to the As Bill Sees It crew for coming in today. We've had a good meeting on Wednesday, which I went to, which is really nice. And this has been Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, 106.1 FM on Access Radio. And If you'd like to close with the serenity prayer with me, that would be great. So, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding the Access Internet Radio Project.